This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Listening Library presents Star Wars Most Wanted by Ray Carson. Read for you by Saskia Marleveld. Chapter 1. Han was late. Again. If he missed curfew one more time, there'd be hell to pay. He ran through the maze of old sewers, thinking of ways he might be able to talk his way past Lady Proxima's guards. A klaxon sounded, echoing through the damp, murky tunnel. The racket startled a clutch of rats, which squealed and skittered over the toe of Han's boot, disappearing into the shadows. The klaxon meant that somewhere above him, on the dark streets of Corellia, a factory had just signaled the end of night shift. He had mere minutes to get back to the White Worm lair. Fortunately, Han knew a shortcut. Or, perhaps, unfortunately. The quickest route would take him past old man Paolo's hidey hole. He could handle the old guy, right? Just because a few of Han's fellow white worms had disappeared in Paolo's territory didn't mean the shortcut wasn't worth the risk. Han's luck would hold. He was sure of it. A grate appeared on his right, barely more than a dark impression in the stone wall. For the thousandth time, Han wished Lady Proxima would light these tunnels. But most in her gang were Grindelids, an amphibious species with near-perfect nighttime vision. Mere humans didn't warrant such accommodations. Han crouched before the grate, grabbed it with both hands, and lifted it from its mooring. It moved easily. Only a tiny clatter of crumbling mortar gave him away. Han ducked inside and replaced the grate behind him. Now he had to choose. Move quickly or quietly. He couldn't do both. His stomach growled. His pants were too short on his frame. Maybe he wouldn't be so hungry if he wasn't still growing like a weed. That's why he was supposed to be proving himself to Lady Proxima. The position of head had recently opened up due to the tragic disappearance of the current head. And Han needed the promotion desperately. And the extra food ration that came with it. Quickly, one. This tunnel was too low for an all-out sprint. So he hunched his shoulders and pushed forward at a fast jog. It was so dark that he risked missing his turn, so he let his fingertips slide along the wall as he went. The cold stone was slick with something squishy and damp that started to build up under his short nails. He tried not to think about it. It was a welcome relief when his fingertips met air. He turned right, ducking his head to avoid the low overhang that he couldn't see but knew was there. A sudden scent brought him up short. The White Worm Lair, with its many entrances, wasn't exactly located in the most fragrant part of Corellia. Word on the street was you could smell a white worm coming a click away, thanks to the abandoned buildings and sewers they called home. Han hardly noticed anymore. He was nose-blind to the scents of rot and waste. It was rare for him to smell anything at all down here. But this was different. Sharp and bitter, with a hint of char. Old man Paolo had found something unspeakable to burn for breakfast. Just as well. It meant that Han was less likely to become breakfast himself. A few more steps, and a dim glow began to cut through the darkness. The tunnel walls brightened from fathomless black to sticky gray. Here, beneath the oldest part of the city of Coronet, the tunnels were made of duracrete blocks, with dark mold staining the mortar and oozing down the sides. Good thing Han wasn't afraid of a little dirt. Just a few meters more, and he would be beyond Paolo's lair and home free. The tunnel ceiling became even lower, and Han had no choice but to slow his pace. The glow sharpened. Light poured from a giant crack in the wall, large enough for an almost grown man like him to slip through. Instead, he began to tiptoe past. Against his better judgment, Han found himself peeking inside. He'd seen Old Man Paolo before from a safe distance, but never spoken with him. He couldn't help being curious. The crack opened into a small, round cave. A fire pit ringed with cinder blocks took up the center space. Beside it crouched Paolo himself, wild gray hair sticking up at all angles, knobby knees bent practically to his ears, as he held something dark to his mouth and crunched noisily. He was skinny and long-limbed, clothed in tattered rags. From this distance, lit only by firelight, Paolo seemed human, but Han knew better. No one had any idea what species the old fellow was, or where in the galaxy he'd come from, but he was certainly not human. Han crept past, toes light, breath measured and soft. The ball of his left foot dislodged a bit of gravel. It was the slightest sound, hardly noticeable at all. But Paolo whirled, baring sharp teeth. The creature's eyes glowed molten gold around slitted pupils, like those of a venomous snake. Han froze. His mind told him to flee, but his instincts were commanding him to stay put, that running was the worst thing he could do. Han always trusted his instincts. They'd kept him alive more than once. They stared at each other for the space of several breaths. When in doubt, brazen it out, was Han's motto. So he forced a cheerful smile and said, "Hey there, pal." The creature frowned.
"Not pal," he said. "Paolo."
His voice was raspy and thin. Han blinked.
"Right. My mistake. Anyway, your breakfast smells
like rotting fish boiled in bad ale.
Really delicious."
Paolo's glowing eyes narrowed.
"Won't share. Can't make me."
Han put up his hands.
"No problem. I've got breakfast waiting for me back at the lair. Lady Proxima's probably getting worried by now."
All lies, of course. Proxima didn't give a rat's whisker about him or anyone, but Paolo didn't need to know that.
"Just heard there was a fellow down here. Wanted to stop by and, say hi. Introduce myself. I'm Han."
"Han,"
Paolo repeated.
"Yep, that's me. And you're Paolo. See? We're friends now."
The fire crackled while Paolo considered this. He took another bite and chewed, his eyes never leaving Han's face. Han peered carefully at the thing in Paolo's hands. Whatever he was holding had legs. Lots of legs. At least it wasn't a human body part.
"Well, I'd better be on my way," Han said at last. "Or Proxima will come looking for me. Nice meeting you, Paolo."
He began to back away from the crack in the wall.
"Wait, Han."
Han froze. In a plaintive tone, the creature said,
"You visit again?"
Sure. Of course."
Paolo sneered, showing his pointed teeth. No, he was smiling.
"See you soon,"
he said.
"You bet," Han replied.
He waved jauntily and fled down the corridor toward the White Worm lair. The guard at the gate seemed disappointed when Han slipped through at the last minute, just before he had a chance to lock it. He'd been right to trust his luck. Kira reached the head of the mess line. She dipped a ladle into the giant pot and plopped the viscous sludge that passed for breakfast into her bowl. It was grayish-green with dark flecks, and it tasted like mud soaked in brine. But in all her years with the White Worms, it had never made her sick, which meant that forcing herself to eat it was the sensible thing to do, day after day after day. Of course, if she won the promotion that had just opened up, she'd get to eat fish for a change, even an occasional piece of fruit. Thinking of the promotion made her glance toward the doorway. All the other scum rats who were under consideration for the job had made it back from the night's errands on time. All except one, that was. A human named Han. She didn't think he'd be much competition, especially if he turned up late yet again. Lady Proxima hated tardiness. More important, she didn't trust anyone who couldn't keep up with her unreasonable demands. Kira took her bowl to one of the many round tables dotting the mess hall. Each one could sit six humans or Grindelids, and though the tables were made of molding wood, their sick, slightly irregular shapes reminded Kira of giant lily pads. In fact, the entire whiteworm den put Kira in mind of a dank swamp. Dark walls, wet floors, creeping algae, and even these lily pad tables. Two others were already seated. Rebolt, a tall, broad-shouldered human boy with a perpetual frown, and Saulo, a green-skinned Rhodian with one sagging antenna, whose cheerful disposition almost made up for the fact that Kira could hardly understand a word he said.
"Han's not back yet," Rebolt observed, while Kira settled herself at the table.
"Indeed," Kira said. "Late again."
"Good,"
Rebolt said, then shoved a spoonful of sludge into his mouth. Along with her and Han, Rebolt and Saulo were the most likely candidates for the promotion. Rebolt probably figured Han was his toughest competition. Kira took a bite of sludge to hide her smile. He had no idea who his real competition was. Saulo twittered a question in Hatties.
"They're hounds, not dogs," Rebolt replied, bristling. "And they're in the kennel, getting fed."
"Those biscuits you feed them are better than this," Kira mumbled, letting a glop of porridge fall from her spoon and back into the bowl. Rebolt's hounds almost never left his side. They were fierce, enormous beasts who drooled almost as much as they ate, and Kira was not sad that Rebolt had come to breakfast without them this time. Saulo said something else. All Kira understood was Han, but Rebolt's head shot up. Kira followed his gaze toward the entrance, and sure enough, Han himself was barreling through. He was dirty and disheveled, with sewer mud caking his boots. The curfew alarm pealed.
"Figures," Rebolt grumbled. "Just in time."
Kira shared his disgust, but she kept her face emotionless. She always kept her face emotionless.
"Someone needs to find out where he goes," Rebolt said. "Why he's late, or almost late, all the time."
Rebolt wanted dirt on him. Something that would disqualify Han for the job of head. Kira didn't like Han any more than Rebolt did, but he'd get no help from her. She kept an eye on Han as he hurried through the line, got his bowl full of sludge, and brought it to their table.
"Hey!"
Han said.
"Hey!"
They responded in unison. The four of them almost always sat together. It wasn't like they were friends or anything, but they were among the oldest in the gang, and among the first accepted into the White Worms who weren't actually Grindelids. They had survived a long time in this place, so they tended to stick together. They ate mostly in silence. The other White Worms watched them from their own tables. Things had been tense lately. Everyone in the lair knew one of the four was most likely to get the position of head. The Grindelids hated the idea of taking orders from a human or Rhodian. It made sense, though. Grindelids needed environment suits to be on Corellia's surface for any length of time. Their white, segmented carapaces couldn't handle too much dry air or light. But a human or Rhodian could conduct business anywhere, anytime, without an expensive suit to maintain, which was why Lady Proxima had been recruiting so many humans the past few years. Naming one of them head was the right strategic move for her.
"So Han," Rebolt began,
and Kira winced with the sure knowledge that Rebolt was about to be clumsy and arrogant, and pretty much eaten alive by the much cleverer Han.
"Rebolt,"
Han said, around a mouthful of sludge.
"You were almost late.
Again.
You call it almost late, but I call it on time. I was on time. Again. Where do you go all the time? What's so important that you'd risk curfew? Wow. Is it just me, or is this sludge particularly fishy today? Han said.
Very fishy, Kira agreed. Han had a way of throwing people off guard. Rebolt was trying to be assertive, but in just a few sentences, Han would turn the tables. She used to believe it was all part of a careful strategy of Han's, but now she knew better. There was nothing strategic about Han. Everything he did was born of instinctive reflex. Su'ulo said something, but Kira only understood the word for burn.
Yep, Han agreed. Definitely overcooked.
Rebolt's frown deepened.
Don't change the subject. I want to know where you were.
Han scraped around his bowl with a spoon.
No dogs today. Did something happen to them?
Rebolt bristled.
Su'ulo
twittered something.
Oh, right. My mistake, Han said. Hounds, not dogs.
Kira understood Rebolt's desire to find out where Han went. If he was running extra errands for Lady Proxima, or doing something that gave him an advantage, then Kira wanted to know too. But Rebolt's direct line of attack was always doomed to fail, and he couldn't see it.
I'm going to tell Lady Proxima she should have you followed, Rebolt said. You do that? Han said. You waste Proxima's resources like that, and you're bound to stay a scum rat forever.
Rebolt began to protest, but Kira set her bowl down loudly. The other three looked at her.
Everyone has secrets, she said to Rebolt.
If a direct line of attack didn't work, sometimes you had to come at things sideways instead.
As you pointed out, no one knows where Han goes after his shift.
Han narrowed his eyes at her, not sure where she was going with this.
Good, she thought.
For another example, she continued calmly, no one knows why Su'ulo's left antenna is drooping. He's too young. Something happened to him. Su'ulo frowned.
For yet another example, no one knows where your hounds came from, Rebolt, or how a poor white worm kid like you can afford to feed and train them.
The side of Han's mouth turned up into a tiny half-smile.
So I suggest you let it go, Kira said. Or someone might be tempted to ask you some uncomfortable questions.
Are you threatening me? Rebolt asked.
Kira tried to appear affronted.
Of course not. I'm helping you. And you're welcome.
Rebolt looked back and forth between her and Han, but he chose to be uncharacteristically wise and said nothing. Han leaned toward her and said,
Does that mean you have a secret too, Kira?
His face still wore a lopsided grin. She hated that grin. It made her want to punch him in the face.
Everyone has secrets, she said evenly.
The trick with Han was not to let him put you on the defensive.
If I told you mine, I'd just have to go find new ones.
His eyes did not leave her face as she turned her attention back to her bowl of sludge. Su'ulo said something that made both boys snicker.
What did he say? Kira demanded. Su'ulo, what did you say?
He said it's no secret that you look lovely today, Rebolt offered. Isn't that right, Han?
Han nodded.
And that you are the jewel of the White Worm Lair. Also not a secret. And that the Corellian sun is a dark shadow compared to your...
Rebolt began gamely.
Something really bright.
Su'ulo was laughing now. Fine, don't tell me, Kira said, making sure her face displayed a slight frown. But letting them joke at her expense was a good thing. It would put them at ease, lure them into underestimating her. A commotion across the room got their attention. The round hatch to the inner sanctum swung open. A pair of small Grindelids entered the room and stared threateningly over the pale white beaks of their faces. They were followed by Moloch, Lady Proxima's right-hand worm. He was still wearing an envirosuit, a set of brown robes bleached grayish-white from sewer pollutants. The robes were insulated with layers of moist air. A vaporizer rested around his neck, blowing mist up at his wrinkled white skin and long nostril slits. In one hand, he carried an ivory-colored shock staff,
a staff that occasionally appeared in Kira's nightmares. From a distance, it seemed beautiful, sculpted in flowing lines like flowers or vines. But up close, the vines became limbs and tentacles that swirled around the staff's tip as though writhing in pain and horror. Moloch must have just returned from the surface. Kira wondered where he'd been and what secrets he was keeping.
Han!
He bellowed. Han flinched, and his bowl clattered on the table, drawing Moloch's attention. The Grindelids strode toward them, robes dragging on the ground.
Ha! Smirked Rebolt. You're in trouble for being late after all.
Kira almost felt sorry for Han. Proxima never fetched someone after shift, unless something was wrong. Well, at least he'd be no competition for her job.
And Kira!
Moloch said as he reached their table.
Lady Proxima wishes to speak to you both.
Kira's heart dropped into her belly as she and Han shared a terrified glance. Reluctantly, she rose from the table. A few bites of sludge remained in her bowl. Su'ula reached for it, giving her a tentative look. She nodded permission. Her appetite had fled anyway. Han pushed his bowl over too.
Here you go, pal.
The Rhodian snout turned up into what was, for him, a huge grin. Han stood.
Let's get this over with.
Rebolt scooted his chair back and rose as if to accompany them, but Moloch shoved him back down.
Just Han and Kira,
he growled. Rebolt tensed, as though ready to fight back, but Moloch was bigger than Rebolt to the same degree that Rebolt was bigger than all the other human kids. And Rebolt never picked a fight he might lose.
What? Why just them?
None of your business, scrum rat.
Whatever they can do for her, I can do better. I'm loyal, punctual, and...
Moloch cuffed the back of his head.
Your hounds are hungry.
What?
Go feed your hounds,
Moloch ordered.
Or I'll feed you to them.
Rebolt froze, then nodded assent. Kira would trade places with him in a nanosecond if she could. He clearly thought this strange daytime meeting conferred some kind of privilege. Kira knew it meant trouble. Based on the grave look on Han's face, he knew it too.
With me. Now,
Moloch said to Han and Kira. Then he turned and walked away without a backward glance, fully expecting to be obeyed. Su'ula ignored them all, happily shoving the extra sludge into his mouth. But she felt Rebolt seething at their backs as she and Han followed Moloch to the audience chamber. Two white worm guards stood outside the massive door hatch. A bulkhead door, no less, tarnished staining the edges. These tunnels and underground chambers were old. Rumor was the gang's lair used to be a massive manufacturing site. A few rooms still housed defunct machinery, hulking steel stamp presses, a few lathes, and even an industrial-sized holding tank that was empty of everything but rust. Some of the dim overhead lighting still worked because Su'ulo, the den's resident genius, had illegally tapped into the power grid of a nearby factory. In addition, three sump pumps kept groundwater at bay. But only three. The lair actually contained five sump pumps, but the white worms purposely kept two turned off. As a result, the audience hole, known to the kids as the sinkhole, was meters deep in slimy, rusty water. Beyond the door hatch was a round tunnel leading to Lady Proxima's underground pond. Kira and Han stepped forward to enter, but Moloch put a huge hand on Han's shoulder, stopping him in his tracks.
Kira enters alone,
he said to Han.
You'll go in after.
She and Han shared another startled look. Moloch prodded her forward, and she stepped into the wet air of the tunnel. Alone. She strode forward confidently. One thing she knew was, the more nervous you felt, the more confident you needed to seem. Until the tunnel ended at the edge of the pond. The walls of the sinkhole rose around her, giving the impression of a long-lost ventilation shaft stretching for the surface and fresh air. Morning light filtered through a few narrow windows at the top of the shaft, like a promise of something better, But the windows were mostly painted over in black, so that only a few motes of brightness reached the bottom. Kira focused all her attention on the only thing that mattered. Lady Proxima had emerged from the middle of the cistern, like a grindled castle surrounded by a greasy moat. She wore an outfit that was half body armor, half jewelry, all of it made from pieces of machinery scavenged from the factories of Corellia. As if, even though she was forced to live underground, she was determined to turn the industry of this planet into her own source of strength and fortune. Kira admired that. She saw a role model before her. Lady Proxima stared down at Kira, flexing the claws of her dominant arms. The bone-white beak of her face looked like an axe, ready to fall on the nearest target. When she smiled, the wet line of her mouth gleamed like the edge of a sawtoothed blade. No doubt Lady Proxima intended the gesture to be reassuring.
"So nice to see you, Kira, my darling," she hissed.
"Good morning, lady," Kira replied with perfect poise, though her heart was a drum in her chest. Lady Proxima glanced around the room at her loyal soldiers. Kira couldn't tell if she was going to dismiss them or order them to attack. The hatch door slammed shut behind her. Han did not care for this situation one bit. He stared at the hatch, hoping Kira was all right. Not that he cared much for the girl. She was stuck up, hard to read, and way too smart. She tried to keep a low profile, but Han knew Kira was his toughest competition for the position of head. It would make his life a lot easier if something unlucky happened to her. But he couldn't bring himself to wish misfortune on her. Kira might be snobbish and inscrutable, but she had never been unkind to him. Unlike Rebald and Malak. Besides, she wasn't hard to look at. Also unlike Rebald and Malak. The moments ticked by interminably. At his back were the sounds of bowls being cleared away, chairs scooting, white worms chattering. The noises gradually faded as everyone finished breakfast and made their way to the bunk room or tunnels to catch some sleep before the Corellian day turned to night and everyone would be sent out to work again. Soon, Han was all alone in the mess hall, with the exception of Malak and the two silent white worms guarding the door to the sinkhole. A rat-catcher droid scooted past his boots. The tiny little tank had been a janitor droid at one point, but Saulo had repurposed it to catch vermin. The lair had a tiny fleet of rat-catcher droids now, and they could be counted on to snag several scree rats and vervics per day, which the white worms used to add some much-needed protein to their breakfast sludge. Han sighed. He really needed that head position, if only so he could eat something besides rat porridge. "So," Han said to the guards, just to fill the silence. His voice seemed too loud to his own ears in the empty, echoing mess hall.
"Long night?"
Malak made a clicking sound that could have been a threat, or possibly just something stuck in his teeth, but otherwise didn't respond. The other worms said nothing, just stared straight ahead as if he wasn't there.
"Any idea what Lady Proxima wants with Kira and me?"
he tried again. One of the worms looked down at him with disdain, but said nothing. Han tried one last time, because talking was way better than this horrible waiting.
"So hey, a few of us have a sabacc game going in the bunk room. We play every night before shift. You should join us sometime."
Still nothing.
"I'm just starting to learn. Do you know how to play sabacc?"
He might as well have been talking to a wall. Or three walls, even. Han shrugged. You couldn't blame a guy for trying.
The door flew open, and a rush of wet, warm air almost made him sneeze. Kira barreled out, her eyes as unknowable as always, but her shoulders were tense, her mouth stubbornly set. She was a petite brunette, almost a whole head shorter than Han, but somehow her presence could fill a whole room. Something about that made him uneasy.
"Kira, you okay?"
She ignored him, rushing past without looking right or left, and headed for the tunnel leading into the sewers.
"Nice talking to you too,"
he called after her.
Get inside, scrum rat,
Mollock said, shoving Han with the butt of his horrible shock staff. Han put his hands up.
All right, I'm going.
He stepped into the tunnel, and the door slammed shut behind him. Lady Proxima rose from the middle of the sinkhole, water lapping at the pond's edges. She wore nothing but chains and metal plates, which seemed impractical to Han. She must get very cold, and all that ironwork seemed like it would rust in the damp air and chafe her skin. Definitely not for him. He'd much rather have boots that kept his feet dry and a thick jacket for warmth. But to each their own, he wasn't about to judge. The water rippled with movement, and Han was reminded that hidden in the murky pond beneath the giant Grindelid was Proxima's latest brood. He had no idea how many she hatched at a time, maybe hundreds of tiny worms, all clamoring for food and space. He was glad they were mostly restful now, that he couldn't see them. The rest of the room was empty. Not even Proxima's top lieutenants were in attendance. It made the back of Han's neck itch, because the sinkhole was always filled with worms. Some even slept here. For some reason, Proxima had sent them away.
Han, my dear boy, she began. I have a special assignment for you.
Of course, lady, he said quickly. Whatever you need.
But his heart was sinking. Whatever the assignment was, she didn't want anyone to know about it, which meant it was dangerous, and she considered him expendable. He was nothing more than a human scrum rat to her. So much for that promotion. Not to mention the lost sleep. Proxima kept him busy every night, running him around Coronet to collect payments, gather information, or fetch small shipments. After that, of course, he had a bit of his own business to attend to, which almost always resulted in an all-out sprint to get back to the lair before curfew. Sometimes he could barely stay awake through breakfast. It was a relief to fall into his damp, filthy bunk every morning. But there would be no sleep for him today.
I want you to go to the foundry, she said.
Sure, no problem. He'd been to the foundry plenty of times. He even had a friend there.
Take the tunnels and enter through the basement. The access hatch will be unlocked for you.
Access hatch. Got it.
She leaned forward on her pedestal and made a sharp clicking sound. It was the noise Grindelids made when they were hungry.
Han, my boy, you must not be seen entering or leaving, no matter what. Do you understand?
He blinked.
Sure, I can do that.
The foundry employed thousands of Corellians, churning out basic starship components for the Empire and other interests on its massive assembly lines. Even the basement might be occupied. He swallowed hard.
No problem. Do you want me to fetch something? Or is there a message you want me?
She hissed, cutting him off. Then said,
No questions, boy. Not this time.
Han pressed his lips together and waited.
In the basement, she continued, you'll meet a contact. He will ask what you've been up to. You're to say that you've been dusting crops, the easiest job in the galaxy. Now say it back to me.
I've been dusting crops, the easiest job in the galaxy.
Good boy. If you don't say those exact words, well, I will miss you tremendously.
I see.
It was as he feared. She was sending him on this errand because she considered him expendable.
After you've given the code phrase, Lady Proxima said, you'll receive further instructions, which you will follow exactly. Do you understand?
Yes, honored lady.
A thin film of sweat was collecting at his hairline.
I'm sending you because I need someone I trust to be discreet. You must tell no one about this errand, and you must stay alert at all times.
There could be... complications.
He opened his mouth to ask what kind of complications, but slammed it closed when he remembered that he wasn't supposed to be asking questions.
You know how much I care for all my children, Lady Proxima said. And it pains me to send my darling human boy on such a dangerous mission. But if all goes well, and you do exactly as told, and return to me...
She paused for a moment, letting him wonder.
I am prepared to name you Head of the White Worms.
He almost gasped aloud, not believing his luck. Suddenly, the most dangerous assignment he'd ever received had become the greatest opportunity of his life. He could do this. He had to. Sleep could wait.
Don't disappoint me, darling, she said, using her best approximation of a mother's loving gaze.
Han knew better than to trust that gaze. Whenever she looked at him that way, he felt like a juicy spider about to get pounced on by a monkey lizard. He said,
Have I ever let you down, honored lady?
She smiled again, and the corners of her eyes wrinkled. Lady Proxima tended to be above the opinions of everyone, especially her white worm children. But she liked to be flattered. Then she waved a pale, segmented hand at him and said,
Now get out of my sight. I need my rest.
Yes, lady.
The hatch opened for him, and he backed out of the sinkhole, bowing as he went. When it shut, he leaned against it and took a deep breath. He hated bowing. He hated telling Lady Proxima everything she wanted to hear. He hated being such a toady. Sure, it was a calculated decision, essential to his survival as a Corellian scrum rat, but it felt wrong, totally against his nature. If he got that position of head, he'd finally have some authority, some freedom, not to mention better food and sleep. Maybe a new pair of boots. And he could finally tell that jerk Rebolt to
Move it, Han,
Moloch said. He lifted his shock staff to point the way. A simple gesture, not intended as a threat.
You have work to do.
Han took off at a jog toward the exact same tunnel Kira had entered just minutes before. What had Proxima said to her? Kira almost never showed discomposure, so by the look on her face, it must have been something awful. He hoped the girl was okay. He ducked into the sewer and headed for the foundry. Chapter 2 Kira located the stash right where Lady Proxima had said it would be, at the sewer exit near the green. It was a nondescript pack made of waterproof leather. Inside was the outfit Proxima had promised. A sturdy, knee-length skirt over black leggings. A beautiful, bright red top that made Kira gasp with pleasure. And a beige flight jacket that would hit her waist perfectly. She lifted the clothes to her nose and sniffed. They had been sprayed with some kind of floral perfume to cover up the rotten smell of the sewers. It was going to be the nicest thing she'd ever worn. Maybe when this was all over, she'd get to keep it. Kira changed quickly, paused a moment to admire the color of the top, such a gorgeous, saturated red, then swung the gate open and stepped into the sunshine. Well, sunshine was overstating it. It was a typical gloomy Corellian day, full of clouds and haze. Decades of industry had given the sky a reddish-brown cast, and Kira sometimes felt as though the whole world was going to rust. But compared with the sewers at night, it felt brighter than a sun. The sewer itself drained into a small artificial creek running through a grassy park. It was one of the few areas of green space left in Coronet City, located on the outskirts of the capital, far from the scents of fish and exhaust steam and sewage. The green space existed only because the posh hotels surrounding it, which catered to imperial dignitaries and other influential business entities, felt it was important for their guests to have something beautiful to look at. More important, the surrounding thick foliage made it the perfect egress for white worms who needed to reach the edge of town without being seen. Today, though, Kira was supposed to be seen. It was the strangest thing, she mused, as she peeked around the bushes and waited for a good opportunity to blend into the crowd of pedestrians. Lady Proxima had never before asked her to be noticeable.
I need someone attractive for this assignment, she'd said. Someone poised. You need to be seen entering and leaving the hotel.
Kira found the idea strangely thrilling, not having to hide. And the message she was supposed to give? It was the oddest, most exhilarating thing. She couldn't wait for the words to come out of her mouth. The most amazing thing of all, though, was Lady Proxima's promise. If all went well, Kira would be promoted to the position of head. She could hardly believe her luck. It was an incredible opportunity, and her entire focus for the next few hours would be on making it happen. The foot traffic had thinned. Kira threw back her shoulders, raised her head high, and stepped from the trees onto the cobbled path, as though she had every right to be there. One person, a human with blonde hair, gave her an odd look, but no one else seemed to notice that she'd come from the direction of the creek. She strode forward with purpose, pretending to be oblivious to everyone else. She couldn't help observing, though, that while her bright red shirt was the nicest thing she'd ever owned, not that she owned it yet, she was still underdressed. Only Corellia's richest residents lived in this district. Kira followed the path toward her destination, the Buckhell Center, a massive hotel and business complex. It was one of the largest buildings on the planet, a sprawling edifice with multiple wings that hugged one of the city's few hills like a giant shining spider. Supposedly, it was the only building on Corellia that rivaled the luxury and beauty of those on Coruscant. Or so Saulo had told them all. He'd been born on Coruscant, so he would know. Or maybe that had been a tall tale to impress everyone. The tree-lined path ended abruptly, and Kira found herself confronting the main thoroughfare. Land speeders whizzed by, many of them sleek and beautiful, and not at all like the ones she was used to seeing around town. A hollow board ahead flashed an advertisement for a home air filter, guaranteed to protect children from Corellian pollution. In the distance, the sky buzzed with ships taking off and landing at the spaceport. A well-lit pedestrian tunnel allowed her to cross the thoroughfare. She strode through it as though she belonged, and emerged at a wide colonnade leading to the Buckhell Center. The sight gave her a start. Framing the entry were two massive turrets, each the size of a small freighter. They hummed and hissed, pivoting on their bases. Kira kept her head high, her stride purposeful as she walked between them. One turned toward her, and her breath hitched. Lights flashed, and the gun barrel crackled with electricity. After a moment, it turned away, choosing to evaluate another pedestrian. Kira kept going as if nothing had happened, but her mind was reeling. Defensive smart turrets at the Buckhell Center? What did it mean? Nothing good, that was for sure. She dodged a few luxury speeders that were dropping off guests, and she was almost to the entrance when darkness descended all around, like a blanket had been thrown over the sun. Several people gasped. Even the protocol droid at the valet booth looked up. Kira followed his gaze. An Imperial Star Destroyer had pulled in overhead and hovered in the sky. Saulo had told them that to hover safely, a Star Destroyer had to remain in the planet's mesosphere. Yet even at that distance, it was large enough to turn day into night. It was not the first destroyer she'd seen. They were becoming an all-too-common sight in the Corellian skies, as more and more of the planet's factories began to manufacture components specifically for Imperial projects. But it still made her shudder, because it seemed like an omen. Between that and the turrets, Kira was on high alert when she finally strode through the glass doors and entered the complex. Her stride faltered. Never had she seen such luxury. Golden highlights sparkled on every surface and framed every painting and mirror. The potted fruit trees could double their breakfast rations back in the lair. The couches scattered in groups around the lobby looked more comfortable than any bed she had ever slept in. Maybe she could acquire a couple of throw pillows on her way out. But that wasn't why she was here, and she forced herself to remember that she was supposed to be seen. The lobby milled with guests of every species, sentry droids, even a few stormtroopers, a few of whom glanced her way. So far, so good. She approached the wide concierge desk. A bored human woman with premature lines around her eyes forced a smile and said, "How may I help you?" "I'm here for a meeting," Kira said, chin held high. "Can you direct me to the Obsidian Room?" The concierge pointed. "Take the glass tram to the penthouse concourse," she directed. "It's at the very top of the hill, the tram's final stop. The Obsidian Room will be down the corridor beyond the personal residences." That sounded easy enough. "Thank you," Kira said. Even though she had only a few minutes left to make the appointment on time, she spent a precious moment to take stock. Kira always had a backup plan. Always. It had saved her life more than once. So she noted a glass office behind the reception lobby. The desks might provide good cover, if she could get past the sentry droids. To her left was a security booth. Everyone milling around had decent armor and well-used blasters. But the uniforms were private sector, not Imperial. Still, she'd have to keep an eye out for them if anything went down. A hallway stretched right, leading to a ballroom, also guarded by sentry droids. Near the back, a sign promised another tram with direct access to the spaceport. Finally, she spotted what she was looking for. A nondescript door with an access panel, partly hidden by a potted plant. A gray-haired woman in a housekeeping uniform approached it and punched in a code. Kira angled herself to watch, memorizing the code. That was the door she'd use if she needed to make a quick exit. An employee-only corridor was her best chance at finding sewer access without going out the front door and facing those turrets. Knowledge always made her feel better. Buoyed, Kira turned toward the glass tram the concierge had indicated. Several beings were already inside. Two humans, a droid, and a short, hairy alien whose species she'd never encountered before. They all parted to make room, and she pushed the button indicating her destination as the penthouse concourse. The doors slid closed, and her feet were nearly jerked out from under her as the tram capsule zoomed along the concourse. Kira was supposed to be poised, serene, implacable, but she couldn't help turning to gawk at the sights like an off-world tourist. The tram skimmed along the outskirts of the Buckhell Center, gradually working its way up the hillside, thus offering an unmatched view of the city of Coronet, with its grimy markets and buzzing thoroughfares in the center, the churning factories and shipyards at the edges, and beyond it all, the massive spaceport with one of the highest traffic capacities in the galaxy. Kira felt as though she was flying, nothing between her and the Corellian sky but pure air and speed. The city blurred below her, with pollution, with distance, with gloom. But as the tram continued to climb the hill, everything crystallized. The man standing beside her gasped. They had ascended above the smog line, and the sky was the most glorious cerulean she had ever seen. The smog stretched below them, brownish red and as thick as a blanket. But along the horizon were mountains, actual mountains, tinged green with life and blazing with morning sunshine. The planet of her birth was beautiful, more beautiful than she'd ever imagined. The tram made several stops, and passengers trickled in and out. Finally, it glided gently to a halt at the penthouse concourse, and Kira stepped out reluctantly, her eyes still feeling a little glazed. She blinked, took a deep breath, and continued on her way. The corridor she traveled had regular doorways on either side, just like the tunnel with their bunk cells. But this hallway felt so much longer, the ceiling so much higher, promising a large, comfortable, airy space behind each door, instead of another dark hole. Every detail, from the lights on the walls to the decorative room numbers, seemed to indicate an impossible excess of wealth. She was staring at the wall decorations, here in a hallway where anyone could just take them, when a janitor droid scooted past and startled her. She almost squealed, but then she smiled, delighted. She'd always wondered what janitor droids looked like before they were re-engineered to catch rats. It was still a boxy little thing, but sleeker, with cleaning brushes instead of pincers, moving efficiently down the corridor, cleaning up dirt too small for her to notice. When Kira looked up again, she had reached her destination. The Obsidian Room, a high-security luxury suite for Corellia's finest class of visitor. She raised her hand to the access panel, and the doorway slid open, keyed to her palm. How Lady Proxima had managed to key a distant hotel room to her palm print was too terrifying to contemplate. She straightened her shoulders and stepped inside. The living area of the penthouse suite had been cleared of furniture, and her footsteps echoed on marble tile. A vast window looked out on that incredible sky, and it was with some effort that Kira ignored it to size up her situation. Three others were already in attendance. A small human male with a pointed rat-like face and a furtive demeanor. A taller, middle-aged woman with hulking shoulders and a severe gray bun. And a silver protocol droid with a dented right arm. They all stared as she approached, and she realized, with a sinking heart, that she was the only one who was unarmed. Come to think of it, she'd never seen a protocol droid carrying weapons before. Strange.
"So nice of you to join us," said the rat-faced man to Kira. "What have you been up to?"
"I've been dusting crops. The easiest job in the galaxy," she replied smoothly. The rat-faced man nodded.
"Then we shall get started right away. We'll begin with the representative of the White Worms. What is your bid, young miss?"
This was the moment she'd been waiting for. Kira raised her head high and said proudly, "The White Worm bid is 450,000 credits. She couldn't even imagine such a sum. So much money. But she kept her expression cool, as if it were just another day in her life. The tall woman chuckled. Even the droid gave Kira an odd look. The rat-faced man's hand shifted toward his blaster. And all of Kira's enthusiasm for this assignment came crashing down. Somehow her message had been poorly received. She was not a person who was prone to mistakes. But maybe she had forgotten something? Said the wrong thing? The rat-faced man turned toward the tall woman.
"Your turn,"
she said.
"The Caldona Syndicate bid is 675 million credits.
Kira had trouble keeping the shock from her face. She had no idea what they were bidding for, but whatever it was, Lady Proxima's bid had been so low as to be insulting.
"And you?" the rat-faced man said, turning to the droid.
"It is my honor and pleasure to inform you that the droid Gotra bids 1 billion credits."
The gray-haired woman's dismay was clearly visible. Her fingers twitched near the blaster at her hip.
"Excellent," said the rat-faced man. "One moment as I check with my superiors."
He pulled out a comlink and began speaking in a language Kira couldn't identify. While he spoke, she rehearsed what she'd heard in her head. The Caldona Syndicate. The droid Gotra. Her bid had been too low, but at least she could return to Lady Proxima with information. Maybe the position of head was still within reach. The rat-faced man's eyes grew wide, and he argued back fiercely about something. His hand rested on his blaster. The woman and the droid looked as though they were ready for anything. At last, he stashed his comlink in a pocket.
"I'm sorry it had to come to this," he said,
and he raised his blaster and pointed it at Kira.
"Wait, wait! I can fix this!"
Her hands came up in protest as her mind traveled 1,000 meters per second. She knew she couldn't outrun a blaster, so she had to stall, figure a way out of this room. The rat-faced man did not pull the trigger. He raised an eyebrow, waiting to see what she'd say next.
"Just kill her," the woman said. "She obviously didn't take this seriously. To me, that says she's a mole. Maybe Corsic."
"It's clear our bid was insulting," Kira conceded. "But I represent one of Corellia's biggest players.
I'm sure I can put in a good word with the White Worms and get a revised bid. I came in good faith, unarmed, see? Would Korsak have come unarmed?
She hardly had any idea what she was saying. She just knew she had to say something, anything, until she could figure out a plan. There was no furniture in the room, nothing to hide behind except the droid. And then he might start shooting at her, too. No way to get out the door without waiting for the palm scanner to operate. She was stuck in the worst way. The only other way out was that huge window. It was undoubtedly built to withstand extraordinary pressure and winds. Even the occasional lightning strike. But maybe a direct hit from a blaster at full power would do the trick. A broken window would create chaos, maybe give her a chance to escape. She had to get someone to shoot at the glass. The rat-faced man said,
"Are you authorized to offer a higher bid?"
He raised an eyebrow.
"That much higher?"
"Yes, of course,"
Kira said without hesitation, which was a lie. She had no comlink, no resources, no real power. Still, despite everything, it was a rush to be taken seriously, as if she were an actual player, someone who could make things happen. Her head felt a little dizzy with it all.
"One moment while I contact my superiors again," he said, and pulled out his comlink.
While the rat-faced man spoke over the comlink, the gray-haired woman glared at Kira, and the droid muttered,
"Oh dear, this is not going the way I expected at all. Revised bids. It's all very untoward."
"We should all get to revise our bids," the gray-haired woman said. "It's only fair."
The rat-faced man looked up.
"My superiors have decided not to accept any revised bids. They are very pleased with the offer presented by the droid Gotra."
"No," the gray-haired woman said. "You'd give it to droids over humans?"
Kira logged that bit of information, too. The Kaldana Syndicate had also underbid, counting on the seller to show favoritism toward humans. The rat-faced man ignored her. To the protocol droid, he said,
"You may now acquire the merchandise in the agreed-upon manner."
It was on the tip of Kira's tongue to inquire if this meant she wasn't going to get shot after all. But the gray-haired woman pulled out her own comlink and angrily informed someone that they had lost the bid. Kira began backing toward the door.
"Everyone?" the gray-haired woman said into the comlink. "Fine. I understand."
And she drew her blaster.
"Watch out!" Kira cried. "The droid is about to shoot!"
The droid was about to do no such thing, but he was standing in front of the window. The gray-haired woman reacted with dizzying speed, firing her blaster and nicking his shiny silver shoulder. The majority of the blast crashed into the window glass, causing cracks to spiderweb out from the point of impact. Kira continued moving toward the doorway, while the glass crackled and popped, fissures spreading. Everyone was in motion now. The rat-faced man and the droid fired back at the woman. One of the blasts came so close to Kira's face that she felt heat against her cheek. She didn't know anything about blasters and fighting, but she'd heard somewhere that moving targets were harder to hit. So she abandoned all subtlety and somersaulted over her left shoulder, barreling toward the door. The window cracks gave, and icy air rushed in hard and fast, lifting her hair, causing her eyes to stream with tears. Kira palmed the door lock. Another blast ripped into the wall, missing her scalp by millimeters. The door slid open and she rushed outside, slamming her palm against the lock, even as another bolt chased her into the hallway and shattered a mirror hanging on the wall. The door slid closed. Kira grabbed a potted fern. It was so huge she strained to lift it. She slammed the planter base into the door panel, crushing it to pieces. Then she dropped the plant, it barely missed her foot, and fled down the corridor toward the tram. Taking the tram was a risk. She knew it even as she entered. The walls of the entire complex were probably alarmed with sensors. Security personnel already knew there had been a breach. A tram capsule coming from the penthouses would surely attract attention. They might even be waiting for her. But a complex this size had multiple trams and corridors. Security couldn't possibly cover them all, not even with all the security droids she'd seen.
She'd get her best odds of survival by taking the fastest way back. Just in case, though, she punched the dining concourse as her destination, rather than the lobby. It wouldn't do to exit right in front of that security booth. She'd depend on the tram to get her most of the way, and